Ways and Means Committee will be called to order. Rosa, would you please call the roll?
Chair McLean.
Here.
Vice Chair Buchanan. Majority Whip Lamarca. Ranking Member Escamani.
Here.
Representatives Bankson.
Here.
Barnaby.
Here.
Burfield.
Here.
Campbell.
Here.
Caruso.
Here.
Casello.
Here.
Daly.
Here.
Duggan.
Here.
Fabricio.
Here.
Fernandez-Barkin. Hart.
Here.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Raina Goolsbee.
Here.
Roach.
Present.
Robinson.
Here.
Roth.
Here.
Saroy.
Here.
Smith.
Here.
Tant.
Here.
Valdez.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Rosa. As a reminder, members, please turn all your electronic devices off, and that would I appreciate anyone in the audience as well checking theirs. Members, this morning we have three bills that will be presented, and then we'll also have a presentation from the governor's office on the governor's tax reduction plan. All of the bills are being presented by a member of the committee. Members, you can present from your desk, or you can go to the podium if you would like. And so let's move into our first bill presentation, and that will be House Bill 475, Residential Gray Water System Tax Credits by my Vice Chairman, Buchanan. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair McLean, and I guess good afternoon. Good morning, committee members. Great to be with you. HB 475 is a Residential Gray Water Systems Tax Credit for home builders. Now, as many of you know, water is the most precious resource in our state. As Florida continues to grow at an incredible rate, we must be proactive as it relates to our water resources that we consume. As we approach the quarter mark of the 21st century, and the standard practice is still flushing portable water down our toilet, that's literally. So this is how gray water works, because there's, from time to time, there's kind of different ways people look at it. But as it relates to a residential gray water system, most typically what we're looking at is a system of which you have a unit that's similar to the size of a water heater that goes into the garage, and you're looking at 25 to 30% total savings of water. And we're talking about now, this is water that's coming from the shower head to the toilet. And that's how the system works. Appreciate the opportunity to bring forward this important bill, Mr. Chairman, and look forward to any questions we have.
Thank you, Representative Buchanan. Members, are there questions on the bill? Any questions? Representative Campbell, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative, for bringing this bill forward. My first question is in regards to just the bill in itself. Why is this not in play currently?
Representative, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. As I mentioned earlier, while gray water is kind of used in a variety of different senses as it relates to residential gray water, it's relatively new. So when you look at this, it's more or less going to be a tool within our toolbox. It's not a silver bullet item. But when we start to talk about between a quarter and a third of water that can be reused per household, that's a significant number as you look into the future.
Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, from my understanding, currently there are four organizations worldwide that would be that fits under the bill platform as far as how to be able to serve what we're trying to present. Is there a reason why?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Campbell, for that question. So a lot of these are private companies. There are no less than 10 companies that are within the gray water space, but as you begin to look at this designation, which is a very high-level designation, when you think about it, this is water quality of which your pet could drink. So it's not set for human consumption, but it's a higher-level designation. I believe there are certainly multiple companies as it relates to that fit this designation, so we're not talking about one particular company, but I think when you look at kind of the new technology. It's relatively new. I think a lot more folks are going to be coming into the space, and especially as adoption rate across the country opens up.
You recognize for a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I know there's provisions in this bill that has a limitation on who can participate. Is there a way that more small businesses can get in on this action, say the least?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Campbell, for that good question. So the answer is, we're talking about just the manufacturing side now. When we begin to talk about home builders, there's a lot of home builders that are going to be able to participate in that space, and that's really what we're talking about here. We're talking about a $4,200 credit, but it's capped at 50%. Most gray water systems, we're talking about between $8,000 and $10,000 per unit. And so it would be capped at that 50% mark, or not higher than $4,200.
Representative Killebrew, you recognized?
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You mentioned shower water and toilet water. What about the kitchen, dishwashers, washing machines?
You recognize?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative Killebrew, for that good question. I think... So there is a delineation here as we begin to think about, black water, which is obviously the toilet water. As it relates to sink water, that would be precluded from what we're talking about. Largely what we're talking about here is shower, but it could also be, hypothetically, I think it could also be your washer. It could hypothetically, I think, also be non-kitchen sink water. That's not black water.
Next is Representative Roth. You're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you, Chair Buchanan, for this great bill. We all know that Florida is going to be suffering from water shortages due to our climate and all the people moving into Florida. So my question is, in my reading of the bill, so this tax credit, is it just for home builders and general contractors, or is it also applied to just like me as a current homeowner? Can I go out and buy a gray water system and get the tax credit?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. An excellent question, Rep. Roth, and I'm glad you brought this forward. As it relates to the plumbing and what goes into these systems, it really only begins to make sense for new construction because it would be cost prohibitive otherwise as it relates to retrofitting.
Representative Valdez, you recognize for a question.
Thank you, Chair McClain. Representative Buchanan, almost in the same vein as Representative Roth's question, are non-for-profit builders able to utilize this tax credit?
You're recognized.
Thank you for that question, and thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for that question, Representative Valdez. Off the top of my head, I'd need to look into that for you, and I'd be happy to circle back with you after that, after the committee.
Representative Casella, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Buchanan, how much, if somebody had this system installed, how much can they expect to save, like, on their water bills?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate the question, Representative. So if you look at the lower threshold of what we're talking about, the way I like to think about it, so it's 25%, let's just say of a year, 25% of a year, you're looking at 3 months potential savings. So there's also a cost savings involved for homeowners.
You recognize for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chair. And I think you might have already answered this question, but that's... the cost, the tax credit, will the system to be installed because the builder is getting a tax credit, would that savings be passed on to the homeowner?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate that question. As it relates to the tax credit, this is something that I think it's between the builder and this would be for the builder, but I would imagine, as it relates to savings from that 25 to 30%, whatever threshold it ends up being for that homeowner, they're looking at that savings potentially in their bill.
Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Ranking Member Escamani, you're recognized.
Thank you so much. And thanks, sir, for reaching out to me. And I also spoke to the main lobbyist with the bill, too. I'm curious, how many home builders are subject to Florida's corporate income tax that would benefit from the tax credit?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Representative Escamani. And I know we were going back and forth earlier, and I kept having people come into my office.
Same.
And a lot of them were constituents, so we want to make sure we're taking good care of our constituents. There are many of them throughout the state. I don't have that number on hand, but I can help. I could certainly try to run that down for you.
Okay. Thanks for that. I'm just curious, like, who actually benefits from it.
Yeah.
Quick follow-up, Chair, if I can.
You're recognized.
Thank you so much. I understand that in 2021, the legislature did pass density bonuses for home builders that do this. So I'm curious, you know, why not wait to see if that has an effect versus another incentive program?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and really appreciate that question, Representative and Ranking Member Escamani. That was a historic bill, by the way, because we were doing a lot of things, but one part of that bill, which you are referencing, was providing, allowed for local governments to provide density incentives for those that want to include, builders that want to include this into their communities. A lot of this will not come online for another 3 years, just as it relates to time frames. I mean, that's the inside window. It could be as long as 5 years. And so, in my opinion, I think we should look at a faster adoption rate as it relates to something like this, especially with the rate of growth that's occurring between now and then in Florida. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I'm bringing this bill forward.
Okay. Follow-up, Chair, if I may?
You're recognized.
Thank you so much. So if your bill becomes law, the density bonuses will also stay in statute, or is there any effort to kind of switch them out, or are we going to keep them the same?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and appreciate the question, Ranking Member. We're at the first stop of this bill. If we want to have some conversations further about making some changes here, I'm open-minded to it. There's nothing in this bill that addresses those density incentives, but I'm open-minded to, you know, if we want to talk about time frames or caps, I'm open-minded to having those conversations moving
forward.
Awesome.
Thank you, Chair.
You're welcome. Members, any more questions? Seeing none, there are no amendments to the bill. Is there public testimony on the bill? There is. Jackson Oberlink, Florida Rising. Let's see, waves in opposition, Lance Pierce, Association of Florida Community Developers, thank you, Lance, and Andrew Ketchell, thank you, Andrew. That's all the public testimony that we had. Members, we are in debate. Is there debate on the bill? Any debate? Rep Banks, and you're recognized in debate.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Having been born in Southern California, water scarcity, it was a real issue there, and I'm glad that we're being more proactive in that looking forward with all the density, as you mentioned, that's coming in the state. I think this is a tremendous bill. I'm voting up on it. Thank you.
Thank you. In debate, members. Any Ranking Member?
Thank you so much, Chairman, and I do appreciate the passion that the bill sponsor has in, you know, trying to, you know, put into place systems that are going to be more sustainable and resilient. I will say, and I already spoke to the bill sponsor about this, so he knows, but my recommendation on anything that has to do with a corporate income tax credit is we do consider a sunset provision, and we also consider some sort of cap. And the reason I share that, members, is according to the Revenue Estimating Conference, right now the fiscal is somewhat, it's negative but indeterminate because the REC made the point, as the bill sponsor spoke, that this technology is kind of evolving, but it has the potential to grow really fast, especially with state support and state intervention. So if you don't put a cap on it, we're going to create a potential environment where only one, two, three main developers get the most benefit. Because any corporate income tax credit, remember, only corporate actors who pay a corporate tax benefit. Nonprofits don't benefit. Small businesses don't benefit. So I really encourage members to consider any type of corporate tax credit or corporate tax break. It's not something that everyone directly sees. My colleague asked the question about, will savings be passed down to the consumer? I agree that the savings with your water bill are definitely very meaningful. But at the same time, it's not that the developer is now guaranteed to pass down the cost they have to the consumer. And, you know, as one example, Lennar turned $4.6 billion in profit last year. And so I think it's worth asking about, you know, who needs the subsidy? Is it consumers or is it big companies? And so I just really would appreciate the conversation and consideration of caps, of sunset provision, and maybe even a requirement, you know, that if you receive this, you also have to file combined reporting with your income taxes. So at least we have a clear picture of what all your taxes are, you know, versus just one side benefits the most. And yeah, just want to share that perspective. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Campbell, you're recognized in debate.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the sponsor of this bill. Almost called you speaker. I echo similar sentiments as my ranking member here. You know, I wanted to see that small businesses have access to this as well to participate in and provide the services that is being presented. I think this is actually a good idea. I would also say or challenge you to add that as a mandate moving forward. It's something that we, you know, we do that automatically for that is because I was kind of taken back that wasn't already in the plan to begin with. But outside of that, thank you for presenting this, and I look forward to voting on your bill.
Thank you. Representative Roth, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I really appreciate it. And again, I'm obviously going to be up on this bill. Representative Buchanan, Chair Buchanan, I think this is a far-reaching bill. It's a good first step. I know we're having a lot of conversation about how we can include more people can enjoy this tax credit benefit. Obviously, I think this is a good first step. I think we need to remember, as Representative Doug had just said a minute ago, We really do have other states like California that, even though they have water shortages, are not really doing much about it. We in the state of Florida really need to step up. We decided a couple of years ago that we're going to spend more money on affordable housing. We're going to spend more money on water quality subject to sewer conversions. We're going to spend water money on resiliency. And I think we should be adding water supply to one of the planks of our infrastructure. So, thanks again for this great bill, Chair Buchanan.
Members in debate. Representative Buchanan, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and I appreciate all the feedback and questions from members of the committee. And when I look back as to why I ran this bill, when you look at for the last 2 years prior to this session, I was fortunate to chair the Agriculture Water Quality Resiliency Subcommittee, of which, in looking back, one of my biggest concerns for Florida as we look into the future was the water quantity issue. And I think that's still something that's a major issue for us, as it is many states across the country. And when you look at what we've done this session, the speaker had the foresight to do this session and putting together infrastructure strategies, the big subcommittee, is making that part of the spotlight and making sure that we're being innovative as we look forward to Florida's future across all of these infrastructure areas of infrastructure. I remain open-minded to feedback that we've received within this committee, open-minded to feedback as it relates to if we want to talk about perhaps some caps or time frames. I'm open-minded to that feedback from my colleagues. I think it's very important to think about this at the very minimum as a bridge until we get to those density incentives. Or if there's other ideas that folks from this committee have that they want to bring forward, I'm happy to entertain those ideas as well. I look forward to continuing the conversation. Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the opportunity to bring this bill forward in your committee. And members, I appreciate everyone's feedback, and I think we just got to continue to be forward-looking when we think about the future of Florida, especially as it relates to our water resources. And with that, I close.
Representative Buchanan, having closed on his bill, Rosa, would you please call the roll and announce the vote?
Chair McClain?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Majority Whip LaMarca? Ranking Member Escamani?
No.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Caruso? Casello?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Raina Goolsbee?
No.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Yeah.
Sorry, Smith. I misheard.
Two votes for Smith.
Yes, I voted for Smith and me.
Valdez?
Yes.
Two nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll show the bill reported favorably. Congratulations, Chairman. Now we'll move on to House bill, PCS for HB 127, ad valorem tax exemption for nonprofit homes for the aged, by Representative Smith. Representative Smith, you're recognized. You're recognized.
Thank you, Chair, and I appreciate the committee's time. For returning members, this will sound familiar. This was a glitch bill I ran last year. It's about affordable housing for seniors. We know in Florida, you probably have in your district, the 55 and over communities. But typically, when a builder builds and then rents homes for those that are low income, that are over the age of 62, they don't pay the ad valorem tax, our property tax, as we would know. So the issue that we're having in the state of Florida and why this bill aligns Florida statute with the IRS tax code is property appraisers and tax collectors were a little bit unsure on the interpretation of the language. So it's really a two-sentence bill that makes it clear. When a nonprofit that builds homes for the aged, and they own other builders, so when a nonprofit builder owns other nonprofit builders, who gets the ad valorem tax credit? Florida doesn't care as long as one and only one entity takes the tax credit. So this bill, there is no expansion of the ad valorem tax credit. It's just who gets it. So there is no, my point being, there is no loss of revenue to the state, to municipalities, or any counties. This just clarifies in Florida statute, aligns with the IRS tax code, on who gets the ad valorem, who can take the ad valorem tax code. I think it's we're breaking down just one small barrier to make it easier to build affordable housing for seniors in Florida. And I would ask for your vote, and I'm inspired to get a Yescamani today. And with that, thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Smith, for your presentation on the bill. Members, are there questions on the bill? Any questions on the bill? All right, seeing none, there are no amendments. We do have some public testimony. Jeff Sharkey. Waving in support of the bill. Thank you, Jeff. That's all the testimony we have. Members, is there debate on the bill? I see no debate. Representative, I'm sorry. Representative Hart, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Also, thank you, Representative Smith. I do know how critically important, being that I do operate a not-for-profit back at home, how important it is to have that tax exemption for people of low income when you're trying to have a housing development and your taxes are $45,000 and $50,000 or $100,000, depending on the number of units you have. So that's a really good bill, and I look forward to voting yes on this bill. So thank you very much for putting it into play.
Debate, members? Any debate? Okay. Representative Smith, you're recognized to close on your bill.
Thank you, Chair. And just in closing, I think there will be other members on the committee that will join me in being offended that they say the age of 62 is homes for the aged. But and with that, I close, Chair.
Representative Smith, having closed on his bill, Rosa, would you please call the roll on PCS for HB 127 and announce the vote?
Chair McClain?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Majority Whip LaMarca? Ranking Member Escamani?
Yes.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Caruso? Costello?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Duggan?
Yes.
Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Hart?
Yes.
Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
22 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, we will show PCS for HB 127 will be reported favorably. Congratulations, Representative Smith. Members, we will move on to House Bill 619, estate tax, by Representative Tant. Representative, you're recognized to present your bill.
Chair McClain, Vice Chair Buchanan, Committee Whip LaMarca, and Ranking Member Escamani, thank you for hearing this bill. Current law requires an affidavit of no Florida estate tax due before probate can be closed. The IRS code eliminated the state death tax credit, and thus the filing of this no tax credit, no tax due is no longer necessary. So the original bill suspended the application for the Florida estate tax chapter to eliminate the unnecessary requirement that a probate tax estate needed to provide proof of no liability. So that was the original bill, and there is a strike-all amendment. So,
okay, thank you, Representative Tant, for that explanation. Members, are there questions on the bill? Okay, we'll take up the amendment. Representative Tant, you're recognized to explain the amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The strike-all conforms the House bill to the Senate bill. That's the first thing it does. And the second thing is it narrows the intent of the bill. So instead of suspending the entire Florida estate tax chapter while the IRS is not imposing the tax, the amendment takes a more surgical approach by simply suspending the requirement for Floridians in probate proceedings to file this affidavit of no liability. So it's just, and then have to wait for an IRS closing letter, which can take an inordinate amount of time. So that's a simple technical fix to this issue, and it will help us streamline the probate process for all of our constituents that are going through probate. So members, that is the bill, and I ask for your favorable support.
Thank you, Representative. Members, are there questions on the amendment? Are there questions on the amendment? All right, seeing none, is there public testimony on the amendment? There is. French Brown. Thank you, French, appreciate it. That's all the public testimony there is. Members, is there debate? Is there debate on the amendment? Seeing none, Representative Tant, you're recognized to close on your amendment.
Wave closed, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Members, without any objections, if there are no objections, then we'll show the objection. We'll show the amendment adopted without objection. Is there public testimony on the bill as amended? Is there a debate on the bill as amended? Representative Tant, you're recognized to close on your bill as amended.
Wave closed.
Rosa, please call the roll on HB 619 and announce the vote.
Chair McClain?
Yes.
Vice Chair Buchanan?
Yes.
Majority Whip LaMarca? Ranking Member Escamani?
Yes.
Representatives Bankson?
Yes.
Barnaby?
Yes.
Burfield?
Yes.
Campbell?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Caruso?
Yes.
Costello?
Yes.
Daly?
Yes.
Duggan? Fabricio?
Yes.
Fernandez-Barkin?
Yes.
Hart? Killebrew?
Yes, ma'am.
Rainer Goolsbee?
Yes.
Roach?
Yes.
Robinson?
Yes.
Roth?
Yes.
Saroy?
Yes.
Smith?
Yes.
Tant?
Yes.
Valdez?
Yes.
21 yeas, 0 nays.
Members, by your vote, we'll show House Bill 619 reported favorably. Now, members, we'll move on into the presentation of the governor's tax reduction plan. Mr. Holger Apollo, will, with the Office of Policy and Budget and the Executive Office of the Governor, is here to present the governor's tax reduction plan for this year. Mr. Apollo, you are recognized. There should, yeah.
Now it's on.
There we go. Yes, sir.
Was a nice try on the name. Chair McLean, members of the committee, representatives, I'm Holger C. Apollo, Policy Coordinator of the Finance and Economic Analysis Unit of the Governor's Office of Policy and Budget. And I want to thank you for having me over here to present to you the governor's tax reduction plan in the governor's budget and the framework for freedom budget. Together with the toll relief program, okay, let me see. Right, there we go. Together with the toll relief program that was passed earlier in the special session A, this package brings the total tax relief offered by the governor, proposed by the governor in the first year of his second year administration to a historic $2 billion. So it's a very large amount that has never been achieved before in the governor's recommended. Yeah. Are we on?
It is. You may have to bring it up a little closer. Yeah.
Okay. How's that?
You may have to get a little closer to it. Sorry.
I'll figure it out at one point. Okay. By the end of the session, I'll be
fine. That's fine.
The governor's proposal consists of three different planks. One permanent tax relief in a total of, $325 million, and to basically cement Florida's position as a low-cost tax state. And the traditional holiday tax holidays, the four holidays that have been passed last year, the governor wants to reinstate them for another $475 million in savings. And then we have inflation protection, which is the third and last plank to basically protect Floridians from the horrendous inflation that we have seen over the last couple of months. These estimates that you see right now are based on the governor's budget recommendations, which we have internally developed, and they're currently under review by the REC about the of the 18 total different pieces that we have, 15 have been reviewed by the IRC, and the total effect has been to increase this whole exemption by about $45 million. So $1.5 billion, $45 million. It's a matter of time, basically. I mean, we did it in the fall and in the spring, and these ones did in the spring. So the three planks. Let's go to the first plank first, not the toll relief, but the permanent tax relief. Raising a family in Florida is, or raising a family anywhere is pretty expensive, both planned expenses and unplanned expenses. And the governor feels very strongly about Florida continuing to be a low-cost state, low-tax state, where it's affordable to raise a family. Tax Foundation currently ranks Florida as the second lowest state in per capita state and local taxes. And the Business Climate Index will be like number four in the total United States. The tax package last year included a one-year tax holiday on children's diapers, baby diapers, clothing, apparel, and shoes for children. And these are items that we consider necessities for basically raising children and having a family. So the governor proposes to treat them similar to groceries, rent, and prescription drugs, to basically exempt them from taxation permanently. So as a result of that, the governor proposes to make these items permanently, take the holiday that we had last year, make it permanently, and to put wipes on top of that, because wipes were not included in the tax package that we had last year. So that's the first piece. Next piece is cribs and strollers. While they're not as frequently purchased as the wipes and diapers, there are also significant expenses that families face. So what the governor is proposing is to also exempt them permanently from sales tax to make sure that Florida's families find it more affordable to raise children. What's the next one? Gas stoves. Here's an interesting one. You probably have heard in the past that the federal government has been accused of possibly limiting the use of gas stoves and some governments are prohibiting the installation of gas stoves in new buildings, like New York, for example. New buildings are not supposed to have any gas stoves or gas appliances anymore. So that's not something we'll be doing in Florida. On the contrary, the governor feels very strongly that people should be able to decide themselves as to whether you want to use gas or electricity to cook, business as well as households. So in order to bring that principle home, there's something not good at this. In order to bring that principle home, the governor basically proposes to make gas stoves permanently exempt from sales tax. Can I figure this out? I don't know. Okay. It sounds weird from here. Pet medications. 70% of the households in the U.S. and also in Florida own pets. It's pretty expensive to treat a pet if it's sick. I mean, OTC drugs, I mean, you have the flea medicine, you got the flea collars, you got the tick medicine, all these kind of things. Costs a lot of money. So what the governor proposes is to make pet medications, over-the-counter medications, tax-free. If you take a look at the humans, I mean, us, prescription drugs, you don't pay any sales tax on. OTC drugs, we're one of the only seven states that completely exempt over-the-counter medical, over-the-counter drugs for human consumption from the sales tax. So the governor proposes basically to make the same provisions for pet medication, over-the-counter pet medications. So that's a very family-friendly tax package. Last not least, the business collection allowance. This is the only one basically that is just tailored to businesses in this tax package. The business collection allowance currently is 2.5% of the sales tax shown on the return, and it's capped at $30. So in order to have like the full $30 that you get in every single month, you would have a business that has about $200,000 worth of sales in a year. Not many businesses do that, small businesses. The collection allowance was started when the sales tax was started in 1949. It was 3% at that time, was tinkered around a little bit in the meantime, but since 1992 has been at 2.5% and at $30. So what we propose is to make that the first $60 of the tax shown on a return. Because what you see right now, we got about 5.7 million returns that get filed in any given year. 1.7 million of those don't get any collection allowance because even though they file electronically, they probably submit a paper return. They submit a paper return. And as a result of that, do not get a collection allowance. Another 1.7 million returns receive a collection allowance of an average of about $12 because they don't have the volume on sales tax on business that to basically support $30. And the other 2.4 million tax returns, they get the full $30 right now. But if you take a look at that, the ones that don't get the $30, they still have the same administrative burden of complying with the tax laws. They still have to keep all the records. They still have to submit electronically. They probably file electronically and get the taxes electronically. So the burden is still there, but they get like $12. I mean, if you have like a $100 sales tax return, you get like $2.50 for argument's sake. So the governor doesn't believe that that's a very good going forward position. So as a result of that, we basically propose make it the first certain amount of, make the first $60 in this case of the tax package. What it does, right now the collection allowance is about $82 million, and we just had the RSC, and it basically moves up to $240 million. Yes, it triples the collection allowance, but about two-thirds of that increase, of the $160 million increase, goes to small businesses. So every small business, if they have at least a couple of thousand dollars of sales taxes in a year, they will get the full amount. So it comes out to be between $360 and $720 a year for a business. So we feel very strongly that that is something that the legislature should really consider. I mean, it's 40 years since it happened. $30 40 years ago is a lot different than $30 right now. So there's that. So the total, okay. So the next piece is, let me figure out how this works. It just sounds weird from here with a mic. The next plank is the traditional tax holidays that we have. You probably have seen them before, back to school, disaster preparedness, skilled worker tools that we had the first time last year in Freedom Summer. Back to school was started in 1998, the first time. We were one of the few states that did it at that time. And since then, it's been done with the exception of 4 years every year. The exceptions was the Great Recession. Obviously, we didn't really have a whole lot of money in the state of Florida, so the budget was kind of tight. And the other one was 2000 and 2003. So the varying length that has been between 3 days and 14 days of the history, and the varying items and thresholds of the items have been adapted consistently. The governor basically proposes to reinstate the back-to-school holiday at the same items, same threshold levels, but to make it two holidays rather than one. Two holidays are 2 weeks, one before the fall semester, another one before the spring semester. We never had one before the spring semester, but we think it's a very good idea to do that because folks go out and buy children's, I mean, school supplies at that time too. Next thing is disaster preparedness. That one was first done after we, in 2004, we had the four big hurricanes, Charlie, Francis, Ivan, Jean. They basically devastated the state down there in the middle. And as a result of that, we had the first disaster preparedness holiday, and that was in 2006 and 2007. Then for the next 10 years, didn't have any disaster preparedness holidays because there was not a whole lot of hurricane activity, apparently. But then 2016, Matthew hit, which devastated the northern part of Florida. So as a result of that, in 2017, the legislature decided, and the governor supported it, obviously, to have another disaster preparedness holiday. And since then, it has been done every year since then, for the last 7 years, basically, 6 years. So we propose to do that again, do it 2 weeks in the summer, May 27th to June 9th, at the same thresholds and price levels and same items that we had proposed that you guys passed in the summer. Next, skilled worker tools. That was the first time done last year. It was very well received, so we decided to propose that again for another week. Lastly, Freedom Summer. You remember the Freedom Week that we had in 2020 and 2021 and 2022. And the governor thought that might be a very good offer to basically do that for the whole summer. So Memorial Day to Labor Day, again, the same items that we had that were proposed in the last year's tax package, do the same things again, same levels, but basically extended to three months in total. Make sure that Floridians can go out and play in the summertime, basically. So that's the traditional tax holidays. Lastly, the last plank is inflation protection. Inflation has been rising consistently since 2021, peaking at about 9% last summer, and it's been recently coming down to 6%, but it's still unbelievably high. And not seeing any kind of reduction in that over the next year, I mean, slightly, but it's still elevated. The governor basically tries to help families out for 1 year to basically exempt certain items from the sales tax to make it more affordable for families to basically cope with the inflation and to make it more palatable. So focusing on children, we have children's books. That's a holiday that you proposed and it was passed last year. That was including until the age of 15, I believe. You make it until the age of 17 to get young adult books in there and to basically propose it for a whole year. Children's toys, is children's athletic equipment, both of these provisions basically make sure that families with children have more money to basically support their children even in this inflationary environment. So it's, you'll see it right there in the description. I don't need to go through it, basically. Last thing is pet food. I mean, it's a very significant expense that families face, too, and all the families face pet food. I mean, I have a dog myself, and every time I go to Costco, I get a huge bag, like $50, $60, $70, you know. So sales tax exemption on that one would be very nice, would be helpful. Everybody can benefit from that. So what we're doing in this proposal is to basically exempt pet food. There's no price limitations on any of this stuff. And the last piece being not just for families but children, but for all families, you got oral hygiene products like toothbrushes, oral irrigators, toothpaste, dental floss, whatever you need. Those are basically items that you purchase day in, day out, more or less all throughout the year. Same with cosmetics and toilet articles. There's a current sales tax exemption for items that include medicinal ingredients, but cosmetics and toilet articles that include medicinal ingredients are currently subject to sales tax. Even though the medical items, if it's sold as a medical provision, is not subject to sales tax. So we said, okay, let's make them subject or not subject to sales tax if they include such medical ingredients. And there's a definition in the bill. We still need to work with that somewhat to make sure our Department of Revenue can administer that. Household items, $25 or less. I mean, toilet paper, laundry detergent, paper towels, hand soap. items that you buy year in, year out, month in, month out. You use them, they're gone, you need to replenish them. So we basically thought it might be a good idea to, and a good benefit for families to not have to pay sales tax on these frequently purchased items. Natural Energy Star appliances. Currently, there is a one-year exemption that was passed last year for Energy Star appliances. We propose to do it for another year, basically extend it for 2 years altogether now. And again, same thresholds and same provisions as were passed last year. And lastly, the natural gas fuel tax. Right now, there's an exemption out there until January 1st, 24, that will kick in. Proposal is to extend it for another 2 years, because what it would do, it would increase the per gallon equivalent for transportation costs about 31 cents, and to basically help folks out with natural gas fuel vehicles, because the transportation industry and things like that, it would be nice to not have to pay them, to basically be sheltered because of inflation still. So, I mean, you're paying more on everything else, so why should you also pay more on that all of a sudden? So extend it another 2 years. What does this all mean? Well, if you take a look at the families with children, we had about 28% of the Florida households have a child in it under the age of 18. So you basically take a look at the savings amount there, $696 million for families with children. So a 2.5 million household, the savings per household is about $280 for the year. Next, tax relief to all families, which is your oral hygiene products and pet foods and things like that. That's about $663 million. We got 898.9 million households. That's about $75 per household on the average. And the tax relief tailored for business, which is the collection allowance, will increase. At that time, it was $142 million. It increased to $162 million. The total cost of that by now. But it's still between $360 and $720 per business that actually has sales tax, that is a sales tax dealer. With that, my presentation is over, and if you have any questions, I'll be glad to entertain them.
Thank you, Mr. Alfalo, for that presentation. Members, do you have questions? Ranking member, I'll start with you.
Thank you so much, Chairman, and it's wonderful to meet you. Thank you for sharing space with us and providing this presentation. I have a few quick questions. I first want to talk about the gas stoves. I noticed that when it comes to Energy Star appliances, the tax break is explicitly limited to residential or non-commercial use, but that type of clarity is not provided for gas stoves as a whole. Mm-hmm. So I'm curious, you know, why is the tax break for Energy Star appliances explicitly limited to appliances sold for non-commercial use, which is on line 525 of the bill, but for gas stoves, generically speaking, it can also be sold for commercial use, which also opens it up for home builders to buy and save and not necessarily pass down to consumers. So I'm curious, why is that difference there?
You're recognized.
Thank you. The Energy Star appliances was basically a continuation of the bill that is currently in effect. So we basically thought, okay, rather than confusing people, let's make it for another year. And on the gas stoves, the governor felt very insistent to make it both for commercial and for households. So that's a deliberate change.
Okay. And then follow-up question on a different topic.
You recognize.
Thank you so much, Sharon. Thanks for that clarity. I want to make sure I was reading it right. For the natural gas, the two-year extension, I think that was on slide. Let me go back to.
One before.
Yeah. Perfect. Yep, the last bullet point. Thank you. So my understanding is that is primarily for like large companies, in particular waste management, and maybe some of the beer distributors. This has been a backstory issue for quite some time. We keep extending this exemption. Why are we doing that?
You're recognized.
Well, again, thank you. Again, even if it's transportation companies or waste management companies, they also feel the threat of the rising inflation. So as a result, to cushion that impact of the rising inflation, we basically said, okay, 31 cents per gallon for another 2 years, basically, would be a nice little thing to do for everybody. So, but you also have natural gas vehicles that are run by consumers, although not that many. But it's largely commercial, yes.
Okay. And then one follow-up, if I can, Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you for that. I'm curious if there's anything in the governor's proposal around combined reporting and trying to close corporate tax loopholes?
No, there's not.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Let's see. I'm going to move on to Representative Roach. You're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chairman. If you'll indulge me, I just have two quick questions. I was curious, does the proposal define, when we're talking about pet medication and pet food, does it define pet?
No, it does not, but that should probably should be something that should be done. I mean, we included all pets, not just dogs and cats. And when somebody has a hamster or a goldfish, I mean, should be included in there. I mean, the estimate that we had arrived at did not really distinguish between what type of pets. So the estimate that was come includes all pets.
Thank you. I guess I'm kind of trying to find a delineation between pets and livestock. Like if you own a horse, is that a pet or is that something else? Or if you own chickens, is that a pet? Is that something else?
That is not the intention of the bill. So in order to clarify that, the bill probably might need to be changed in order to clarify that.
Thank you, sir. I have one more if I could.
Sure. If I could just chime in too just for a second. Some livestock feeds are already exempt.
Right.
So, but clarification may be in order for sure. Representative Roach, you're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Chairman. And, you know, I noticed when you present this, you have different categories. You have the four different categories. And looking at the inflation protection items, I'm curious, is that tied to or is the intention to tie that to an inflation rate, either a national rate or a state rate, in terms of, like, when that will end or when that may be gradually increased? Is it tied to a certain metric?
No, it is not. The inflation protection, the bill basically provides for 1 year tax holiday on these items, irrespective of what the inflation rate will be going towards to in that year.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chairman.
Representative Valdez, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you so much for your presentation today. I have a question in reference to the inflation protection. The national inflation right now it's a 6%, which is down from February at 6.4. What is the inflation rate for Florida?
You're recognized.
We don't have a different inflation rate for the state of Florida. We basically cover the same rate as the U.S., so there should be no distinction.
Okay. Follow-up?
You're recognized.
Thank you. In reference to the traditional tax holidays, the Freedom Summer, it's states in the very last line that it's subject to specified price ceilings. Do we know what that price ceiling is, that ceiling will be?
Those price ceilings are in the current bill that the legislature passed in 2022. So it basically picks up the same items at the same price limitations that were consented on previously.
You recognize?
Do you know what that number is?
It depends on different items.
Gotcha.
I mean, there's a litany of items in it. I'm not sure right now. I mean, but there's tons of different items as to what is covered and what is not.
Thank you. Follow up?
You want more?
One more. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome.
In reference to, let's see, where is that? On the permanent tax relief, where we're talking about diapers and things of that nature for children. Mm-hmm. Have we considered including senior citizens and children with exceptionalities that maybe are older than the age of 5 that must require diapers for medically necessary diagnoses?
That has not been considered in the bill so far, but the governor will definitely be open to amending the bill to do something like that.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Representative Hart, you're recognized.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I do want to applaud your multiple times of back to school. I've been fighting for that forever. So thank you very much for considering that. When we talk about the inflation items, is that for how many years, or is that just for 1 year this year, or is it long term?
Just for 1 year, all of these items.
Okay.
With the exception of the natural gas fuel, which is an extension for 2 years, basically.
Okay. Thank you very much. I greatly appreciate the school.
Thank you. Representative Tant, you're recognized.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to follow up with Rep. Valdez's question. So, first of all, I'm delighted to see the diapers be
be getting a permanent exemption. My next question, though, is like to follow up with her. I am the mother of a child with developmental disabilities, and thankfully he is does not need diapers. But I know of many, many families whose children require diapers who are well over the age of five. And are in our schools, and you know, so I would love to work with you, and I want to see how open you are to working with you on a tax exemption for people with developmental and other disabilities who have incontinence issues.
We'd be glad to do that.
Okay, thank you. I'll make an appointment. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You're welcome. Ranking Member Escamani.
Thank you so much. I had another question about the business collection allowance, and so my understanding is that you know this is. Going to benefit small retailers, but I'm curious, you know, does this also mean that, for example, a Walmart or a Publix, do they get that $60 per location, or is it just per, like, the company itself? Could you explain that to me?
It's a per location item, so if you file a sales tax return that has at least $60, you get for that location a $60 collection allowance. Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and quick follow-up?
Yeah, you recognize.
Thank you so much, Chair. So does that mean that, like, one company that has multiple locations can get it for each location?
That is correct. That's what they're getting right now. Just a low amount.
Representative Roth, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chair. A couple questions, sir, if you don't mind. First one, under Energy Star Appliances, I'm assuming because of where it's at, that it's those are referring to appliances that use natural gas, or does it also include tankless electric water heaters?
The Energy Star appliances are basically washing machines, clothes dryers, and water heaters that are up to $1,500 and refrigerators. So it doesn't specify in the current bill any kind of non-tank water heater. The water heaters will be included. Yes, it would. Again, it's the same bill that was passed last year. So whatever the intention was last year by the legislature to pass this exemption will be carried forward one additional year. No change in whatever the parameters were last year.
Representative Roth, it did include tankless water heaters last year.
It did?
It did.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yes. Can I start? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So I was asking the question I didn't quite understand. So these are high efficiency appliances. Is that what the category is?
Yes, Energy Star rated by the federal government. They rate them as Energy Star, so it has to comply with those guidelines. Okay.
You recognize for?
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair. This is a difficult question to ask, but I'm going to ask it anyway.
Go ahead.
One of the things that I've seen happen over the years. Go to a Home Depot and you're going to buy something and it's a tax-free week, summertime and whatever, it's camping supplies or whatever. And sometimes you seem to notice that maybe the price actually went up in anticipation of the tax holiday. And I know we do have some ability, I think we have some ability under hurricanes to go after people for price gouging. Any consideration given to that type of situation where you're giving, you know, a yearly tax exemption and you're having people increase prices in anticipation of that?
My response, I mean, I've heard these allegations before, and some of those are probably true, some of those are probably not true. Generally, the CFO's office is investigating those kind of, or the agriculture is investigating those kind of things. And it's very hard to distinguish whether somebody increased the price based on thinking they're going to have more customers coming in next week as a result of a holiday, or whether they increased the price as a result of facing supply constraints. I mean, you don't know. So putting something in a tax extension or tax package bill to basically guide or guard against those kind of circumstances would be rather difficult. You can do it in retrospect. I mean, once you see something happening, you would go out and investigate and see what's actually due to it. But it's nothing that you can prevent bill-wise.
You good? Representative Valdez, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you again. Your presentation has been very enlightening, and I echo
the comments of the back-to-school fair, the back-to-school tax. That's just warms my heart. In reference to the inflation protection, and it's in this particular slide, with cosmetics and toilet articles, do you think that there's a possibility that the governor would consider feminine hygiene products as well?
I don't see why not. You can always consider it. It's a legislature's prerogative to basically pass the bill that way or not. But we will be open to that.
Great. My office will be calling.
Ranking Member Escamani, you reckon?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to confirm that we actually already have taskings of administration items. I believe that was a 2018 policy before my time. Yes, so I just want to clarify that.
Thank you. Members, any other questions? Ranking Member Escamani, you're recognized for a question.
Sorry, I wanted to go through the chair always. I really appreciate Representative Roth's questions about tax holidays. And there's some research out there around tax holidays actually not saving people as much money as we think they do, because the big box stores adjust their costs and it just kind of drives consumer behavior in a different way, but doesn't necessarily save people the same amount of money that we like to think they are. So I'm curious, is there any plan for Florida, especially as we expand more tax holidays? Has there been any effort to do a rigorous independent study to understand if Florida consumers are saving money or if it is more of like the, you know, kind of advertisement promotional side of it? Any rigorous study or data we have to help inform that decision-making?
You're recognized.
I don't believe there's a study out there other than what we've seen over the last couple of years, anecdotal evidence. But in this case, you're probably right. It might benefit to do such a study in the future. So.
Members, are there any other questions? Mr. Apollo, thank you for being here today, presenting the governor's tax relief package to us. We appreciate it. Members, I think what I would like to do is, I know all of you probably would want to make some comments, but I think what I'd rather see you do is possibly if you would put your comments on paper, or even as we're formulating the tax package, we'll be working on that over the next few weeks. If you have comments on individual items, or if you'd like something added to the individual list, or if you have concerns that you've raised today, if you would maybe put those in, you know, in an email, send it to Vince, and then he'll start putting all that together. And then when we get to where we present the tax package, we can have those conversations either, and maybe some of those things we'll already add them in, or, you know, try to figure out if we can. And I think that'll be the best process. And then that way we can have everybody's comments on in a form where we can discuss it. But I appreciate all of your questions today, all your comments, the bills that were presented, and we are scheduled to have a meeting on Monday, March the 20th from 2:30 to 5. We expect that notice to go out tomorrow afternoon. And this concludes our committee agenda for today. And Representative Escamani moves, we rise without objection, show the meeting adjourned.